Yo, check one, check two, check three, man. Welcome, welcome. Man, it's Justin Bless. Man, I hope you guys woke up feeling good, feeling great. Man, life is good, life is great, life is beautiful. We'll continue to grow, continue to seek greatness. You feel me? Because we all have greatness in us. We just got to awaken that beast. And how you waken that beast is by searching from within, because all the answers are within. And make sure you stay consistent in whatever that you want to be great at. And that greatness is going to shine through the concrete that you buried under, or that you buried yourself under, other people buried you under. Whatever it is, man, you got a diamond in you, so let it shine bright. And don't let nobody dim your light. And don't dim your light for others. Don't dim your own light. Don't let others dim your light. Make sure you shine and blind them haters that don't want to see you shine. Grind. And think the sunset every single time. You feel me? Hey, man. You tuned into the most vulnerable, most honest, most prolific podcast ever, gracious earth. You feel me? And what we backed by and what we powered by, God, nigga, welcome to the Justin Bless podcast. Bro, how y'all feeling? How y'all doing? How y'all living, man? How y'all kicking it, man? How y'all chilling? Bruh. Man, I feel good, bruh. I feel good. I feel positive. I feel great, man. I'm vibrating at a high frequency. I'm receiving all the big blessings that God has in store for me. Man, a lot of things is going on in your boy's life, but I'm juggling it pretty damn well. You feel me? Whew, man. Checking with myself. Let me get a pulse real quick. Let me check my pulse. I'm still alive. That means I'm still winning. You feel me? Check your post too. If your post still there, you're still alive and you're still winning. You feel me? So today, man, young nigga had to work. So I worked for a little bit. Then I had to go get my teeth clean at my dentist's office. Shouts to my nigga, my girl Kathy, that holds it down for your boy. She always clean your boy's teeth right. These bad boys, man, got 32 of these bad boys, and bad boys is whoo, one of a kind. You feel me? And it's so funny because, like, a lot of people always say, like, or ask me, like, are your teeth real? Like, nigga, yeah, these hoes is real. Nigga, what the hell you think they are, bro? These ain't no veneers. This ain't no fake teeth. They ain't none of that, man. I know this big generation that's going around now popping veneers like it's the thing to do, but no, bruh. Nah, man. Just make sure you just go to a dentist, man. Take care of your teeth. And you're going to be straight. Like, you're not going to need them, man. And also, if you want to go get braces, man, go get them. Don't pop veneers just because you need braces. You don't want to go through the look of braces. Like, to me, braces on girls, man, that shit sexy, bro. That shit fire, bro. I think it's fire. I think it's hella sexy. So let's do it again. That shit fire, bruh. So I don't understand why girls like shy away from it, because not just that, it shows that your patience, but you can endure like pain, and beauty's pain, man, at the end of the day, bro. Just be like that, bruh. You know what I mean? It might be internal, external, man, beauty, pain. So y'all should rock with it. I think so. And then, you know what I mean, brush your teeth and take care of your teeth, man. Your teeth will be white, ain't nothing to worry about. And just stay away from, like, dark dyes, you know what I mean? Like, dark drinks and stuff like that. And if you do drink, make sure you brush your teeth afterwards and you'll be gravy straight. And go to a dentist, man. Everybody go to a dentist, like, twice a year. Nigga, I go four times a year. And that's why my teeth look like this, bruh. This ain't no by mistake. This ain't no, oh man, I just was born with them. Nah, bro, I work hard for them, paid a lot of bread for them. You feel me? And that's why your boy can shine like bling bling. You feel me, cuz? So yeah, that's what I did, Kathy. I did something new too. I did like a laser treatment cleaning. Instead of having that little, that sculpture thing that like kind of takes the plaque off your teeth, you know, we did a laser treatment. And the laser treatment, it's an extra 40, but it does it's lighter on your gums, on your teeth. That's how I feel about it. Like, it'll smooth. It's not, you know, I told you beauty's pain, right? But it's not like painful or any type of irritation or anything like that. So that laser treatment, I definitely recommend for anybody that that want to get their teeth clean right and smooth. You feel? So y'all make sure y'all do that. Y'all make it happen. Yeah, y'all do that. Y'all make it happen. Hygiene is top tier, top level, and amazing stuff. You feel me? But did that. Then after that, came back to work and just did some work stuff, man. That's all it was, all that happened. Then I just chilled. But I do feel good. Oh, yo, also, I got more, not equipment, but materials. Yeah, materials in for my renovation. That's going down, bruh. Going down this weekend. I'm excited, bruh. This is going to be my third one. I feel like I be doing these all the time. But this time I learned way more than my first one and my second one. Like, I know where to cut costs, you feel me? Not spend as much bread. The bread I don't need to spend, I could save that bread for something else, man. Like, you know, I'm spending like damn near 50% less than what I spent on the last two units. You feel me? And I'm excited, happy, and just get pushed on forward with it, man. God is good to put me in this position, man. Don't ever get confused, man. It's because of God, the reason why I'm here and the reason I'm able to vibe, able to be alive, able to be on this pod, share my wisdom, knowledge with y'all, whatever the case might be. You feel, man? And it's great. So we got a couple boards in. I don't really know like these names to the things. I just know what they look like, where you need to put them and stuff like that. I don't know like the whole thing. You feel me? So I got tile for the bathroom, and not all of them. I got some of them in. Got a new toilet. Got a new bathroom sink countertop thing. Got that. I actually got to do a couple more, like, shopping, get some stuff off Amazon, like, light stuff, you feel me, like a disposal and nice stuff like that. So we're going to try to rock and do that. Not try, but we are. And she just got a little bit more equipment to get, materials to get. And we're ready to rock and roll with them, so. Man, your boy getting a little bit tired, man. I hit the gym this morning as well, bro. Like, I've been grinding, bro. Just been grinding, pushing at it, and doing the things I got to do. You feel? But that was me. Y'all tap in with y'all selves, man. See how y'all doing, how y'all vibing, how your day was. If it wasn't okay, then it's okay not to have an okay day. You feel me? Not every day got to be great. Not every day got to be good. But be honest with yourself at least, and be present. And tell yourself the truth of how you feel. And if it wasn't all that, man, try to shake it off. And you feel, going to tomorrow with your head held up high, and you gonna have a better day. You feel me? If you try to have a better day, at least better than a day that wasn't good, then that's a win. It don't gotta be the greatest day, but just gotta be better. You feel me? And if you did have a good day, man, hey, keep that momentum rolling and going and cruising down the boulevard. You feel me? And just keep it rolling, man. Life's good. Life is great. Always be, remain thankful, remain positive, and make greatness happen. You feel me? Tap into your greatness. But shoot, right now, you know what we gonna do? We gonna tap into that praise report. Beep 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 beep. Praise report. Amen. I know. Last episode, I kind of went on a rant, but not a rant. I was expressing my love, going on a rant at the same time, doing what I got to do. You feel me? Sometimes it be like that. Something totally else planned for the pod, but just ran like that. When it runs like that, you got to let it just be and let it just cruise. You feel me? So, hey, that's what we did. But tap into this report. Yo, that boy R. Kelly got sentenced to 30 years, my guy. 30 of them hoes. That's one decade. That's two decades. That's three decades, man. And the wild thing about it, this nigga been locked up since 2019. Like, he been locked down since, like, the whole pandemic and everything. And the thing is, I didn't know he was locked up that long, which is crazy, right? Like, but yeah, man, dude. Sex trafficking, that's what he got charged with. And then he has another court appearance or something like that for a child pornography or something like that. Man, it's like, it's all bad. They'll probably stack another 30 on there. And it's wild. And it's wild thing, too. I remember I seen somebody on Twitter said 30 years is not enough, nigga, for sex trafficking. I feel it. But look, nigga famous, nigga got bread. I know his lawyer stacked. You feel me? And then again, is he really going to do the whole 30? Bill Cosby ain't do his time, the whole thing. You feel me? And he got charged for whatever he got charged with. He only did 2 years, I think. Old nigga just did 2 years and came out like I don't know. You feel me? But those are strong charges, though, for Buddy. But we going to see how it go and see how it move, man. So it looks like, yo, these are the 50 costless places to live and also work. Hold on just a quick second. Let me tap in on that so I can give y'all that list and breakdown just in case y'all want to go over there and go explore. Go do something else, you feel me? Because definitely changing scenery and going somewhere else is always a good thing. So we're about to just run it down real quick and try to do what we... Man. Oh, okay. So we do the most expensive places, right? For foreign workers, man. You got Hong Kong. Man, that's up there, man. The real estate in Hong Kong is so pricey, it's not even funny. Man, you got Switzerland. I thought Switzerland was like nice and cheap and all that. But hey, guess not. Damn, number three again, Switzerland. Man, I can't really say these cities, so I don't know. Basel, Switzerland. That's number four. I can say that. Bern, Switzerland. I can say that. Number five. Then you got Israel. And then you got United States. You got Singapore. After that, you got Tokyo, Japan. That's a place like, I think it would be cool to live there. I ain't going front with you. I just think it would be cool. But hey, haven't been there yet. Definitely got to travel there. Then you got Beijing. Of course, that's up there. Denmark, which is wild. I thought it was cheap there too. But huh, guess not, right? Then you got Shanghai, Shenzhen, China. You got Seoul, South Korea, London, and so on and so forth. You feel? But shoot, where's the I thought this joint had. Man, I thought this was, man, what are these niggas talking about? Oh, I thought it was costless, but it's cost the costliest places to export to live and work. Oh, I thought it was, man, my bad, guys. My bad. But hey, if you want to go over there, you got some nice bread, man. There's some nice places right there. Kind of pricey, but you know what I mean? They're in there for you. So I'll be trying to move and trying to go and trying to adapt or whatever, man. They'll get you right. They'll definitely get you right. But definitely, man, a lot of like travel and stuff like that. Okay, one of the lamest things, bro. But it just, this is just America, bro. Like, it's not no surprise. It just is what it is, which is whack. It shouldn't, but it is. You feel me? You don't even fight it, man. So, okay. So, it looks like there is a warrant for the lady that lied against Emmett Till, right? That got him killed and stuff like that. And everybody know that famous picture and stuff like that. So, there's a warrant for the lady's arrest that kidnapped him. And the lady that lied on it. And it's weird. Like, how can you even live with yourself? Like, how? And the joint happened in Mississippi, of all places, of course. You feel me? So, they find a warrant in a Mississippi, like, courthouse buried in, like, some shelves or whatever for the lady. Of course, they didn't exercise that to go arrest the lady. They just put it somewhere just to file. It was just paperwork, just to have the paperwork. But they, I guess nobody ever threw them away, burnt it or whatever it was, and they ever find it. Now the family want them to use that warrant to arrest the lady that lied, which is wild. Like, how could she lie and get a kid murdered and still just be chilling? Hey, man, white girl tears, man. You can't trump that. Not at all. But, man, it's messed up, but. It's messed up to say, like, it is what it is, but bruh, I'm so numb to all this. That's all a young nigga can say. You feel me? So, it is what it is, bro. It is what it is. But hey, man. Hey, bruh. So. Remember that a couple episodes ago, I tried to say that new judge that got Ketanji or Brown Jackson, like, I don't know how to say her name, but she got sworn and become the first black woman on the Supreme Court, and she just got sworn in today. So we about to watch this young video, you feel me, and we gonna see what these people talking about. You feel what I'm talking about? Let me plug this in real quick. All right, here you go, right here. Here you go, right here.
Brown Jackson, do solemnly swear.
I, Ketanji Brown Jackson, do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
That I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I'm about to enter.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I am about to enter.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Thank you very much. And now I'll turn things over to Justice Breyer.
Good. The judicial oath, will you raise your right hand, please? Thank you. I, Ketanji Brown Jackson.
I, Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will administer justice.
That I will administer justice
without respect to persons.
Without respect to persons.
And do equal right.
And do equal right
to the poor and to the rich.
To the poor and to the rich.
And that I will faithfully and impartially.
And that I will faithfully and impartially.
Discharge and perform.
Discharge and perform.
All the duties.
All the duties.
Incumbent upon me.
Incumbent upon me.
As an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States.
As an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States.
Under the Constitution.
Under the Constitution.
And laws of the United States.
And laws of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
And now, on behalf of all of the members of the court, I am pleased to welcome Justice Jackson to the court and to our common calling.
Let's go, let's go, let's go. Yes, sir. Let's go. Give her a round of applause, yo. She deserves that. She worked hard for it. She made it happen. And, yo, respects to her whole family and everything like that. That's amazing, beautiful things. You feel me? And, man, it's good. It's great. So, I want to share this video with y'all, man. And this is kind of what the pod gonna be about. So I shared this video. I think I kept it. I don't know. Like, bro, do I still got it? Nah, I don't look like I got it. Hold on, guys. Hold on a quick sec. I got it right here. All right, I'm gonna share this video with y'all. And shoot, man. Just open your ears, man. Real quick, just open your ears. I know you guys' ears already open for your boy, but open your ears for what this dude about to say. You feel me? And take it how you may, and we're going to speak about it.
Never be scared to leave your hometown to grow. As much as you love your hometown, it's the one place that'll kill your dream.
My bad, man. Keep getting these text messages. Gotta put this ringer off. Messing up the pod. You feel me? I thought it was only gonna be one. End up being like damn near 3 or 4 of them. Gotta mute that. All right, let's start all over.
Never be scared to leave your hometown to grow. As much as you love your hometown, it's the one place that'll kill your dream if you stay there too long. You move to a new city, you lose nothing. You only gain an opportunity that can change your life. The thing about your hometown is it's never gonna change. You can always come back and do the same thing that you've been doing with the same people. But you go to a new city, it might be a new relationship that could change your life. It might be a new job opportunity that never been possible for you before. You might seek mentorship you never thought you would have. More than anything, you might see something that you never thought was possible for your life. But the hometown is the comfort killer. You can always run back to mom and dad to fix something for you. But sometimes you got $1 million dreams in the city when nobody ever seen $1 million. You gotta go out there and change your surroundings sometimes. Don't never be scared to leave that hometown.
Bro, you got $1 million dreams that no one even seen $1 million before. No one even thought of that, couldn't even fathom that. You feel me? And that's exactly how your boy feel, man. Let's run that one more time, because how deep and how he laid that out was so smooth, man. One more time, let's go. This boy Vic going crazy.
Never be scared to leave your hometown to grow. As much as you love your hometown, it's the one place that'll kill your dream if you stay there too long. You move to a new city, you lose nothing. You only gain an opportunity that can change your life. The thing about your hometown is it's never gonna change. You can always come back and do the same thing that you've been doing with the same people. But you go to a new city, it might be a new relationship that can change your life. It might be a new job opportunity that never been possible for you before. You might seek mentorship you never thought you would have. More than anything, you might see something that you never thought was possible for your life. But the hometown is the comfort killer. You can always run back to mom and dad to fix something for you. But sometimes you got $1 million dreams in the city when nobody ever seen $1 million. You gotta go out there and change your surroundings sometimes. Don't never be scared to leave that hometown.
Bruh. Bruh, bruh, bruh. And that's exactly how I feel, man. I'm like in this, not this rut or this stuck or in this blah space or nothing like that, but just leaving Phoenix been just really heavy on my head, man. You know, I spoke about it a little briefly on this podcast. It's probably within like the last 5 episodes. I probably spoke about it like 3 times, 2 times or something like that. But man's really been heavy on my head, man. Just seeing things about just starting a whole new chapter, man. Like a big new chapter. You feel me? Like a big spin on my story. Big spin on my marathon. You feel me? And in a positive way. And yeah, like people embracing the unknown. Yeah, that joint is scary. But bro, we embracing the unknown every single day. When we wake up and take the first step out our house, we embracing that unknown. And to embrace that unknown, you gotta continue to go, continue to move. And that's how you gonna get there. And that's how I'm planning to get there, right? 100% planning to leave Phoenix next year, man. I'm scared, hell yeah, nigga. Shoot. But not to the point I'm so scared that I'm not gonna take that leap of faith, man. I just really truly feel like I shouldn't be here. And I wanted to move out in 2017, man, like 6 years ago. I wanted to leave. But I was scared though, right? Just like I'm scared now, but I was scared over back then. And I was looking for any type of way to justify why not to leave. And I did. Like my younger cousin Sam, he had no place to, not no place to go, but he had no place to go that was kind of close to a school, and he was going to ASU. And a straight shot from my place, it probably take you like 20 minutes to get to ASU. 22 minutes, something like that, right? Because I stay right off the freeway, so he can just go straight there, like, and be there in like 20 minutes, literally. So I looked at that, and I was like, oh, man, he can only live with me because it only makes sense, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is, like, bro, he is not my responsibility, but I took it on like it was my responsibility because I was scared. And I didn't want to leave necessarily, right? I did, but I didn't. And I latched onto any type of excuse I could find, and that's the one I found. And I tried to justify it like I did something good or I did something great. But the thing is, I felt like I sacrificed my happiness for someone else's comfort in a way. Because I don't really think it was a nigga's happiness, you feel me? Because he slept on the couch, but he had a place to stay, you feel me? Stuff like that. So, man, bro, like looking back then, I'm just like, damn, I should have took the leap, bro. I should have jumped. I should have did it, but I didn't. And it cost me stuff that I never gonna ever find out what it cost me. You feel me? Could have cost me like being already on. Shoot, my clothing brand Blessed could have took the hell off because it was on fire. Could have met a great girlfriend or something like that, right? You don't know. But at the end of the day, it is written and God knows. So he knew I was going to get scared and chicken out. But this time around, God knows I'm not getting scared or chickening out anytime, anywhere. And I do appreciate the way that I'm going to do it now, because I know how to do it right and not to struggle like that. Because when I was 17, I just stack and I just get bounced. But this time, like, I know a proper way to move and my intelligence and stuff like that. So maybe it was written that way for me to grab these gems, right, that I got from YouTube and different places, all different type of sources, man. I got some good knowledge from TikTok. I got some good knowledge from Instagram, good knowledge from people in general doing stuff right, and a lot of people that's not doing shit right. You feel? And I learned a lot of hard, tough lessons I feel I needed to learn even to be out there and like leave my comfort zone of Phoenix. You feel? But hey, it kind of like is what it is right now. And I'm 100% happy at the moment that I am. I got a great girl. You feel me? Our relationship and our bond, our communication, like stuff is growing. And I probably would never met her if I did go to New York back then. But hey, still in my mind, I'm like, bro, I would find a great girl out there or something, you know? But it was written this way, and this is the way that we paint plan. This is the way that it's playing out, and I'm okay with that. I'm not upset, and I understand by looking back what I did, why didn't I do it or anything like that. I understand it. You feel me? I can own up and be a man about it and be like, man, I was scared. Instead of being one of them niggas that's trying to act like too tough or too cool and just be like, nah, you feel me? But it's like what he was saying, bro, like, that stuff killed dreams, bro, and I really feel it. I remember when I was rapping, remember I shared y'all some stuff. Bro, I personally feel if I wasn't in Phoenix and I was out there trying to chase it, trying to make it happen, bro, I think I would been popped, bro. Like, I made music like J. Cole, and I can hop on heavy beats like 808 joints and kill shit, you feel? But I can really let my emotions flow through as well. And that's another thing I think about. Same thing with like with sports, with track and stuff like that, even wrestling and stuff, bro. I would have been a UFC fighter 100%, bro. Like damn near 100%, bro. But now I'm looking, there's this UFC event that's coming up. I don't know these damn numbers, bro. Like these people be knowing these numbers like crazy. Like UFC 202, niggas know who fought, nigga. I do not know. But yeah, like that would have happened. Yeah, like I was saying, the UFC event, I'm just looking at that. I'm like, bro, I could have been up there. You feel me? I'm still young to do it, but it's like, I don't know if I want to do that right now, right? Like, to me, I feel like it's kind of like a young man's game. Definitely a young man's game, man. Like, you got to be sharp with it. You got to sacrifice a lot, stuff like that. But, man, I just looking at them, I was like, bro, I could have been up there. Killed it, you know what I mean? But the cards didn't play out that way, and I'm okay with it. The way that's playing out now, I'm going to make it happen, bro. I'm going to get that Nike commercial. I'm going to get that stuff, bro, the fitness magazines, all type of stuff, man. I'm going to make it happen. Trust, believe, we are going to make it happen, for real. I'm going to push forward, move forward, and great things is happening. Great things upon us. But I wanted to see, I seen this little documentary that was like speaking, right? It says, does your neighborhood determine your future? And I think that's dope because that relates to basically what I'm talking about. Does it? It might. So we're going to see what Buddy's saying and stuff like that. And we're going to break down this documentary a bit.
I grew up in a place called McLean, Virginia, right outside of D.C. But I like split my childhood, basically. So we'll start with where I first grew up. So I'm really excited to show you guys this. So this is my hometown. We were the only black family on the block. I was the only black kid in my grade, one of three black families in my school. And if we look, folks are in the 99th percentile who grew up here when it comes to average income. Less than 1% are incarcerated. We can look at teenage birth rate, less than 1%. Around high school, my folks got divorced and we moved into the city. It's the exact opposite. It wasn't until I got to DC that I actually had a benchmark for understanding everyone didn't grow up the way I did. And it took, you know, my parents getting divorced and us moving to the city for me to actually understand how fortunate I really was.
Zip code influences so much that we have got to make sure that those neighborhood conditions aren't setting people up for failure.
We are keeping people of reasonable means out of neighborhoods.
While I was doing some research, I came across this, which is the Opportunity Atlas. And it's a map that shows you the average life outcomes for people who grew up in a given census tract. It's just crazy to think that I may have only become as successful as I am because I spent the majority of my childhood here instead of in DC. But why don't we take a look at where you guys grew up?
Yo, that's deep, bruh. And I feel it. And for him to recognize that and be aware of that is great, because I know that he got taught and seen. He could got taught by seeing, hearing, feeling emotionally or anything like that, any type of those ways that you can be taught. And he kept them nice traits, even though he went to a different zip code that was the complete opposite. But he found that balance, and that's why he somewhat successful, as if you say, right? And he actually said that. And I believe kind of like the same thing as well. Like, man, I believe leaving Phoenix would be like one of my best decisions I ever made in my life. For real. I really truly believe that, and I'm going to speak on it right here, right now. Leaving Phoenix is one of the best decisions I ever made in my life. It has opened so many doors that I dreamed about. From fitness magazines to podcasting professionally to shaking hands with well-connected people to great relationships that open many doors. My bank account definitely benefited from leaving Phoenix into a tremendous big way. You feel me, man? We just gotta speak it all to existence, man. God is good. God's great. I don't know what city I'm going to yet, but we'll stay tuned.
Da-da-dum.
So you're like in the Bay Area.
Oh yeah. I mostly grew up in Cupertino, California.
Okay.
Majority Asian, definitely fairly wealthy. A lot of like tech, Silicon Valley.
Right.
Employees.
All right. So I'm gonna put in my zip code where I grew up. So I just took you guys to Brooklyn, New York, Crown Heights, and immediately traveling here, it's just completely red. Yeah, so 30K, that makes a lot of sense to me.
But it also just, this shows how segregated Brooklyn is and was at the time.
Yeah. So right here at Grand Army Plaza, it just looks so different from the blocks where I grew up in Brooklyn. And so that was like our Saturday activity. Like, let's go to the library, let's go to the park. And that was kind of escaping a lot of the segregation in Crown Heights to go to this area where the amenities were better.
Did you notice those neighborhoods being cleaner?
Absolutely. And I think the biggest thing was trees. Just like, how many trees do you have on your block? I think it does something to your psyche where it's like, oh, I feel like I can breathe better. I feel like someone cared enough to beautify this area.
Well, guys, thank you for taking the time out to come look at this with me and showing me where you grew up. I want to talk to this professor at NYU to see if I can get some information and some insight into how we actually got here.
So I think the overarching important message to take away is that segregation was intentionally designed. There were a number—
Designed by who?
By a wide range of policymakers on the local level all the way up to the federal level.
When did we start to see the government actually leading a lot of these programs when it came to segregation?
So the federal government instituted these massive housing programs during the New Deal to save a housing market that was in severe distress. The first policy was called the Homeowners Loan Corporation, or HOLC, or HOLC. Part of HOLC was sending appraisers, real estate appraisers, to hundreds of cities across the country, and these appraisers would grade neighborhoods in these cities, and this is where the term redlining comes from.
In your lease, it would say, you cannot resell this house to a black family.
Yeah.
So let me explain. As these appraisers surveyed cities across the United States, they created maps that they distributed to banks. And the banks used these maps to decide how risky it would be to provide loans or mortgage assistance to different neighborhoods around the country. And each of these maps was assigned a color. So green indicated this was the most desirable area, and the map we're looking at right now is an area in the northern suburbs of Chicago. And along with these maps, we were given documents that described the neighborhood that was being surveyed. If we take a look at the top, we can see the class and occupation. We can also see the number of black families in this area, and the preferred nomenclature of the 1930s was Negro. There were zero. Moving on to the next classification were blue neighborhoods. And blue neighborhoods were considered to still be desirable. So as we take a look at the description of this blue area in Chicago, the percentage of foreign families is still zero. The percentage of Negro families, still none. And as we come down to the description, we see the area is well laid out and improvements are attractive, but the proximity of Negro families on Spruce Street at the southern edge precludes the district from a better rating and is retarding its development. The proximity of Negro families, that's so crazy. So as you can see, these maps didn't ignore race. In fact, they were heavily dependent on it. Race played a key factor in determining the value of these neighborhoods and their ratings to the banks. The yellow neighborhoods were listed as definitely declining. This one had 50% foreign families, those foreign families being Polish and German. Race wasn't the only determining factor in whether or not these neighborhoods had value. Immigrant families heavily impacted whether or not it got a favorable evaluation. And as we move on to the last designation of these neighborhoods, we come to red neighborhoods. And this is actually where we get the term redlining from. And these neighborhoods were defined as hazardous. And when we look at the description of the area, the number of foreign families, 5%. There were Italians, but the percentage of Negro families, 90%. And as we make our way down the description sheet, we see this concentration of Negroes in Evanston is quite a serious problem for the town as they seem to be growing steadily and encroaching into adjoining neighborhoods. These maps are how the federal government institutionalized segregation, and they use race to determine the value of all of these neighborhoods. So I want to understand how all of these red lines are impacting people's lives today.
HOLC was passed in 1933, and before that time, places where HOLC made those redlining maps and places that didn't have those maps were about the same level of segregation. And the measurement that we use is a fairly common measurement of segregation called black isolation. Then by 1950, 1960, we see that cities that were where the redlining maps were created, there's this huge jump here.
This one sort of moment, they were collecting the data and published the data, and it vastly impacted millions of American lives from that point on.
Yeah. This gap emerges especially as the Federal Housing Administration and the GI Bill kick in after HOLC, and then we're layering on schools, highways, et cetera, suburbanization, and then all that gets locked in place. So I would say that the gap that we see today is a result of structural racism, which includes the wealth gap, it includes this history of exclusion, it includes the intentional segregating of neighborhoods.
What impact did this have on our economy and the ability for people to participate in it?
Housing segregation has all these other layers on top of it, including education and employment opportunities. So the isolation of people of color, in this case specifically African Americans, has dramatically limited the ability of African Americans to kind of achieve what we generally consider to be kind of middle class status, home ownership, wealth stability, the ability to pass on resources to the next generation.
Any other interesting takeaways from this?
It didn't have to be this way.
So we just learned about how the government has historically segregated neighborhoods across America, but I wanted to understand how these problems are affecting people today. I'm getting ready to meet up with two former testers from the Fair Housing Justice Center. So tell me exactly what a tester is. What did you all do in that capacity?
It's a way of finding out what landlords or real estate agents are saying to people when they think no one else is listening. If you're a real person going out looking for a home to rent or to buy, you provide your information and you're given certain information about what's available in what neighborhoods at what price levels. You have no way of knowing if someone of a different race or ethnicity or any of the protected characteristics is being told the same thing as you.
What are the ways that we're seeing housing discrimination play out right now?
Anytime I hear somebody say, oh, white supremacy, white privilege is just a myth in this country, I say, come do my job for half an hour and you'll see the way the doors get opened for me. I actually had this very nice woman in Brooklyn showing me an apartment. We're always instructed to convey disinterest. She said, tell you what I'm gonna do. Let me write down the number for the entry code for the lobby door. If I'm not here, you just let yourselves in, go up to the fourth floor, show her around the apartment, because I'd really love to see you guys in here.
Most of my experiences are not like Craig's at all. I don't want to paint the picture that every time I'm sent out to test, I'm discriminated against. But I have been involved in cases where very clear discrimination happened. At times, I am shown the apartment, but I'm quoted a higher rent, $300 over my white counterpart, at times not shown amenities in the building, not encouraged to apply where my white counterpart was encouraged to apply.
Lisa, what do some of those experiences that you've had, what do they tell you about what regular folks might be going through?
When you're a tester, as an African-American, I'm representing all the African-Americans that went and inquired at that building and were lied to. So I represent so many other people of color who are experiencing this while just looking for housing, and housing is a basic need.
Yeah, bro. Housing, definitely a basic need. Like she was saying. Let's see what she got going on. It's wild that they try to take that away from us.
So when my dad sold our house in D.C., we had to get it appraised twice. And the first time it was appraised, the value was set at about $800,000. But my dad knew that our neighbors on the same block were selling their houses for much more than that. So we spoke to a realtor who told him to take all of the family photos off of the walls, leave them bare, and get it appraised a second time. And that second appraisal, the value was set at about $1.2 million. And at the time, I didn't think that was motivated by race. But now, after talking to these testers, I'm starting to think that race maybe played a role in the home's valuation. Toby?
Yeah.
Hey, man, I'm Lee.
Good to meet you.
Tell me a little bit about what you guys do at Open New York.
So we are a pro-housing group. We advocate for more housing and more affordable housing all across New York. We are on 11th Street between 5th and 6th Avenue in Brooklyn, Park Slope. And we're looking at a building that couldn't be built today as of right in Brooklyn.
Why is that?
So the zoning rules prohibit it. So in 2003, this area was downzoned.
Why would people want to downzone this neighborhood?
If you owned here, restricting supply is in your interest because it makes your own property more valuable. And that's been the story here for the last 40 going on 50 years.
New York City famously rezoned nearly 200,000 properties between 2003 and 2007 under the Bloomberg administration. But a lot of this rezoning was actually downzoning. Here in Park Slope, some areas were downzoned to preserve the historic brownstones, while other areas were rezoned to increase housing density. How does this impact segregation? At a racial level, at an economic level?
It's brutal, right? By privileging incumbents, and by incumbents I mean largely homeowners, you're entrenching all of your existing segregation. And let's be honest, America is way too segregated today.
And so by downzoning, if this were a white neighborhood, you're making it much harder for it to become a more diverse area.
Absolutely. You are actively working against it.
Fabiola, what's up? How are you?
Hey, Lee, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I just got in touch with this mother in Philadelphia whose children are struggling with lead poisoning, and I want to go talk to her because I feel like this story might really embody the very real consequences of housing segregation, but I'm still looking for someone to talk to about homeownership and the racial wealth gap, and I thought you might have some ideas.
Someone that I've actually talked to before on this is Andre Perry. He's a fellow at the Brookings Institute, actually, so he's based here in D.C.
That's perfect. Do you have time to talk to him while I'm in Philly?
Yeah, I'll see if I can get in touch with him.
Amazing.
Why is home ownership important in terms of economic mobility?
Well, when you own a home, you're more likely to be economically and socially mobile. But home ownership also precludes you from moving every time there's an economic shock. Home ownership predicts for better health, particularly during a pandemic. I can't think of another asset that is so influential on a person's life chances than housing.
What have you found about the differences in property value between predominantly Black neighborhoods and predominantly white neighborhoods? What does that chart tell us?
Homes in neighborhoods where the share of the Black population is less than 1%, on average, are priced about $340,000. And as the percent of Black people in a neighborhood increases, you see the home prices decrease. And so much so that when the share of the Black population is 50% or higher, the home prices on average is about half as much as their white neighborhoods.
So you're saying it's as simple as the more Black people in a neighborhood, the less the houses are worth?
That's exactly right. A lot of people will look at that prior chart and say, oh, that's because of education. That's because of crime. We control for education, crime, walkability, all those fancy Zillow metrics. And what we found is homes in Black neighborhoods are underpriced about 23%, about $48,000 per home. Accumulatively, that's about $156 billion in lost equity.
And how does racial segregation factor into housing valuation?
Well, you know, segregation has a long-standing impact on a number of things. Cities are becoming more concentrated with poor folk, and that is reducing those areas' abilities to pay for services like education, policing, infrastructure. So when you concentrate poverty in areas, not only are you putting a target on those communities back in terms of harmful policies, but you have less resources in a neighborhood. We've got to address this, because if folks can't achieve the American dream through housing, then they're not going to achieve the American dream in any other part of their life.
So I'm on my way to Philadelphia, a city where nearly 8% of the children under the age of 7 are struggling with lead poisoning. Lead is a heavy metal, and when it gets into your blood, it can cause anything from a reduced IQ to ADHD, and some research has actually linked it to school failures and even criminality. And while lead paint has been illegal since 1978, a number of the homes here in Philadelphia were built well before then. So I'm getting ready to meet up with a family whose lives have been reshaped by their zip code. Hey.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, I'm Lee. Nice to meet you.
I'm Angel.
So where are we right now?
Oh man, we're in the area of Allenby in Philadelphia.
Okay, and you used to live out here?
Yes, I did.
So your kids got sick living in this house?
Yes, they did.
What happened?
I took them to the doctor one day just for a random checkup, and come to find out, my daughter had a 9 lead level, and my son, at the time he was 2, he had a 18 lead level.
Jesus. What happened after you found out that your children had lead poisoning?
Did
you call the landlord?
Yes, I contacted the landlord. The city were actually called by the doctors. They had to do the gun test. My children's room, which was the middle room, they had the highest lead levels in the whole house.
How are you dealing with this? You know, you're working mom, you have 3 children.
It's hard, it's extremely hard. Who wants to have their children get lead poisoning? But when you are a single parent, you have 3 children, you're doing everything by yourself, how can you make enough money to just up and leave?
What kind of a message does that send you about, you know, where you live?
You know, if you were to live in Center City, it just wouldn't happen. The suburbs, it would not happen.
So you made the decision to get your kids out of here?
Yes, I did. I actually moved to a hotel.
For how long?
For about a month, month and a half.
So yes. Where are you living now?
In Reading.
In Reading, where is that?
Yes, about 1 hour and 10 minutes away from here.
Can you show me where?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is your new house in Reading.
Yes.
So tell me about this place.
Well, when I first got here, it looked immaculate.
Right.
3 days after, my wall started to have a little crumbling where I saw water.
Can you show me? Can you take
yes.
a look?
Yes. Up here, there's mold all throughout the ceiling. This is where the water leaks at on the floor.
And here, this is more water damage. This right here was seeping water the other day.
Jeez.
There's mold down here just coming out the wall. So I went from one bad situation to a worse situation. I'm literally on unemployment because I was laid off at my job. I have nowhere to go.
When people say things like, you know, America is the land of opportunity, you just gotta work hard, you just gotta pull yourself by
That's a lie. Because I moved from the last place to come here. So what's next?
What do you
Damn, bro. That's crazy. She going through all that. Man, it's crazy what you learn, man, just doing your own research and trying to figure things out, man. It's, yeah, our race to make it in America is definitely harder than any others, for real.
Okay, so I know that I grew up privileged. I know that I was incredibly fortunate to have attended great schools, to know from a young age that I could afford to pay for college, and to just have fresh air to breathe and clean water to drink. What I didn't know growing up was that this was an incredibly rare experience, especially if you're someone that looks like me. I had no idea that the full weight of history was actively working against me having that experience. My parents beat the odds, largely because we always owned homes in this family going back generations, and that had a direct impact on my chances in life. But the scarcity of stories like mine isn't a problem that any one of us can fix. It is, however, something that we don't have to passively accept. In trying to find out whether or not your zip code determines your future, I did see some bright spots. For decades, zoning laws were used to restrict access, but now in some cities, they're being used to encourage investment and create more diverse neighborhoods. There are private firms that are investing in low-income luxury housing that's meant to convert renters into homeowners, and some landlords and members of the real estate industry have woken up to the role that they've played in perpetuating housing segregation and restricting the upward mobility of our neighbors for generations.
For every dollar the typical white household has, the typical black household has about 9 or 10 cents. And this is connected directly to this legacy of redlining and exclusion from the opportunity to build home equity. So undoing that is going to require as big, if not a bigger, investment than was made in the New Deal.
Let's excite the economy in the same way we're doing during COVID, the same way we did after the Great Depression. But we just didn't do it for black people. So now's the time to really correct those wrongs.
Ultimately, we can't reverse the course of history without those who dug this hole reaching in and pulling us back out.
Whoo, man, that was deep, yo. That was deep for real. And I didn't know how it was gonna come about, but it came about the way that was, man. You just learn so much, man. It's just a beautiful thing to go out there and learn about how the housing and everything is set up. So when you go out there, man, definitely try to pick right and know what you pick. You feel me? When you're moving out, that's something I'm definitely gonna look into when I leave Phoenix. You feel me? I know Phoenix and the zones and everything. Like, I know where stuff is at. You feel me? But when I move to another place, you gotta know where it's about. But one thing that he said that was smart, he said, man, my family always own homes. Bruh, that renting stuff is not it. You can rent early on. You feel me? I think that's fine and that's cool and dandy. But if I can go back and not get an apartment, I wouldn't. I'd just stack my bread more up until I get a house. Real talk, even though if it's a small house, still get it. Because it'll be worth a lot right now. Could have sold that, got a bigger house or invested it. You know, a lot of things could have happened. So that was a key point. And I just wanted to highlight that. Hey, man, I appreciate y'all for staying tuned in to another episode of the Justin Blessed Podcast, man. We're going to keep rocking and keep rolling. Hopefully, you guys are continue to vibe with your boy. I'm going to continue to put out that good energy, and hopefully it's able to lift you up, make you smile, make you laugh, help you learn new things and create more life. You feel me? You already know what it is. You already know what it is. It's Justin Bless. Justin Bless. None less.